Good afternoon. The Education Finance Committee will come to order. Welcome, members. Today we're going to do an overview on compensatory funding, compensatory revenue. And before that, I think I have minutes. Yes. There are a copy of the minutes in your packets. Let's see, Representative Marquardt, if you had a chance to review the minutes from the, I don't have my glasses, February 16th meeting, I think that is.
So moved, Madam.
All right. Thank you very much. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of adopting the minutes from the February 16th meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Oh, minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Here's my glasses. All right, we're in better shape now that I can see. Very good. What we're going to do today is just an overview hearing. We've been trying to work that in addition to hearing a few bills. And today we're going to focus on compensatory revenue. So I thought we would start out by having Mr. Strom just do kind of a brief overview on compensatory revenue and how that came to be and how it operates, and then we will move into testimony. So, Mr. Strom.
Madam Mayor, members, there's two documents in your packet that we'll be using today for this overview, a single sheet entitled Compensatory Revenue, and then a printout that shows aggregated up to the district level the amount of compensatory revenue that each district gets. Let me spend 2 minutes on a historical transition to where we are today, and then I'll talk a little about our current formula and a little bit about how to read the compensatory revenue printout. Since the late 70s, Minnesota has had a formula in place that recognizes a proxy variable for purposes of measuring low socioeconomic status of students at school districts. Prior to the changes that were adopted by the 1987 legislature, this was done through pupil weighting. It was actually, in addition to the regular weighting by grade level, there was weighting based on the number of students who were eligible at that time for from families that qualified for AFDC. And that measure of eligibility, AFDC eligibility, was what was used up until the mid-1990s. And beginning in 1996, as the federal government got rid of the program known as AFDC and replaced that with TANF, there was a move in Minnesota to change the way the students were counted for the compensatory formula. And that count was moved then from the AFDC count to the free and reduced lunch count of students. And that formula essentially has been relatively unchanged since. It's a concentration formula, and we'll talk a little about that now. But really, some recognition of students from families of low socioeconomic status has been a part of the school funding formulas in Minnesota for more than 40 years. In Minnesota, compensatory revenue is part of our general education revenue program. For the first year you're going to be budgeting for fiscal year 18, it's expected that compensatory revenue will be about $540 million. That's slightly under 10% of what goes out of the formula allowance, but certainly is the single biggest component after the formula allowance of general education revenue. Compensatory revenue is site-based. It's counted at and determined at each site within each school district. There are a lot of sites in some districts, not just elementary schools, but each individual in secondary schools, but each individual program, whether it's a day treatment program or a program at a hospital or ALC or something like that, is going to measure the students at that site, and the compensatory revenue is going to be calculated on the basis of the characteristics of that individual site. That amount then is essentially summed up for each district, summed up to the district level, and provided as part of the regular general education payments to districts. Up until a few years ago, all but 5% of that revenue had to be provided right back to the sites where that was earned. A couple of years ago, that was changed, and now a school board may adopt a resolution and allocate up to 50% of the revenue according to program characteristics across the full district. Prior to that, it was limited to being used at the site where the revenue was generated. Compensatory revenue needs to be used to meet the educational needs of the pupils whose progress toward meeting state or local content performances is below that which is appropriate for other children of their age. There are number uses in statute. Those are listed on the single sheet for you. Each district determines with input from their sites how to allocate the compensatory revenue, but you can see that some uses include remedial instruction, staff development, lowering class size, providing additional assistance for English learning programs and other programs like that, and extended time programs, including extended school day, week, and year programs. So those eligible lists, that list of eligible uses is quite broad, and I think when you hear from the districts today, you'll hear that each district has a slightly different plan of how they allocate that money and for what purposes. The compensatory revenue is linked to the basic formula allowance. The revenue keys off of the formula allowance as the starting place and then keys off of the free and reduced lunch count at each school site. Every child that qualifies for free lunch, who is a child that's family is at 130% or less of the federal poverty guidelines, qualifies for free lunch, and they count as one under the formula. And each child whose family qualifies for a reduced price meal counts as 0.5. The count for each district is added up, and then it goes through what we call a concentration formula. So the higher the percentage of free and reduced lunch eligible students at each site, the more that each of those students generates. And if you take a look at the printout, even though it's calculated at the site level, if you take a look at the printout in the second to last column, you'll see the revenue per enrollee, and then the last count is the revenue per free and half reduced lunch student, and you can see how those vary across districts, and the reason for that is because it is a concentration formula, a concentration program. A couple other things to point out on the printout for you. The printout starts with the enrollment. That's the actual physical count of bodies in the district during the fall of 2016, and then the free count and the reduced count for each building. The free and half of the reduced count are added together to form the next column, which is the adjusted count. You can see from the printout that's 296,000 free and half reduced lunch students in the state. That percentage is determined, and the higher that percent, the more money per free and reduced student that the district's going to get. And then the third to last column shows that $538 million and how that's allocated to each district across the state. The second to last column, as I mentioned earlier, is the revenue per enrollee per student, essentially. And the last column is the revenue per free and reduced lunch child, and that helps you get a sense of the variation by concentration. So the higher that percentage column, the higher that last column is going to be. Finally, at the top of the spreadsheet, I've broken out Minneapolis-St. Paul as one region, the other seven county metro area school districts as a second region, Greater Minnesota as a third region, and then the charters as a region as well, so you can see some comparisons across those four different groups. Finally, Madam Chair, compensatory revenue is required to be reserved. Each school district puts that in a reserved account. It has to be used only for the eligible purposes that are listed in statute, and each district is required to do an annual report describing how that district spends its compensatory revenue. So, Madam Chair, very quickly, that's an overview of our compensatory revenue formula.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, has an analysis ever been done, though, to see if, based on the uses that the district cites, whether that's had a direct relationship to achievement or proficiency or growth, maybe in reading? Is any of that analysis available?
Madam Chair, I'm not aware of that at the state level. I believe the individual districts look at that data. A number of districts, including the Anoka District, which have some special rules related to their compensatory revenue, are required to look at performance measures. And when they discuss their district's use of compensatory today, that may be a good question to ask them. A number of years ago, the state or the legislative auditor did a very nice report on compensatory revenue, and one of their findings at that time was the eligible uses were certainly very, very broad, and their recommendation was the legislature think about whether that range of uses was too wide, and for that reason didn't allow much comparison of actual effect of the compensatory revenue.
Thank you. And I think that's a good suggestion. So I, Representative Erickson, so when the testifiers come up, if you could just incorporate that into your testimony. If you have a question about what that was, I'll have Representative Erickson ask it of the first testifiers, but it'll carry through for everybody. All right, and then Mr. Strom. The reports, I'm assuming those reports are prepared and sent to the Department of Education every year, do you know?
Madam Chair, I believe they are. I don't believe the department, and the department may want to comment on this, I don't believe that they compile them in any manner, but I believe that the districts report to the department.
Okay. Thank you. All right, well, we'll have the department comment on that later, but I want to make sure we have ample time to hear from the school districts that we've been invited to be here today. And again, we've tried to pull sort of a cross section, if you would, of school districts. And with that, if there's no just general questions for Mr. Strom, we'll call up representatives from the Anoka-Hennepin School District. And welcome. And I assume that you all will be testifying about compensatory revenue, but you're also one of the school districts that has been part of a pilot for a number of years, so you'll be talking about that as well.
Absolutely. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm David Law, Superintendent in the Anoka-Hennepin School District, and I've brought with me firsthand experts, a principal and a classroom teacher, so you get a chance to see how this revenue supports our whole school. I have provided some handouts for you, but first I'd like to just draw some information about the Anoka-Hennepin School District. With the handouts that Mr. Strom shared, you can see that we are the largest district in the state. Our 13,000 students this school year that are receiving either free or reduced lunch would represent the 10th largest district in the state were they a district by themselves. Unfortunately, for our current funding structure, those students are buried in very large buildings. Our concentrations of poverty don't work for us. Our 11 secondary sites range from 1,200 to 3,000 students. All of our secondary sites are bigger than the average size district in the state. So those large numbers of students, 600 or 700 students buried in a large high school, receive less support. I also would like to point out that we operate efficiently in a property tax poor district, and so we run large class sizes. Without this compensatory revenue, we would have a really hard time meeting the needs of our students below proficiency. So I want to thank you for continuing to fund both the revenue of the comp ed formula and the pilot for us. And I'd be happy to answer questions about the pilot. But for today, I'm just going to focus on the compensatory revenue in general. I provided a handout that just shows our proficiency. I'd like to point out that at just under 30% free and reduced, we are almost the state average for free and reduced students. We take a lot of pride in the fact that we find better than average results for our students. I provided data, Representative Erickson, about our proficiency in math and reading. I would specifically draw you to the third page and fourth page that shows the number of students served in our district. And this slide shows on a site-by-site basis elementary school. Our school board has decided that we do intervention early. We want to get our students reading and confident by third grade, so the majority of our compensatory education in the elementary sites goes into our K-3 programming and also across our elementary sites. Specifically to results, I point out that on page 4, we have pre- and post-intervention data for elementary students based on MCA tests and for our students that don't take the MCA tests, other measures that are standardized. In almost every category, you can see that after intervention, students move up to be either closer to proficiency or above proficiency. And we report this as part of our Comp Ed pilot grant every year, the fact that our interventions make a difference. The last two pages in your handout reference a point of pride for our school district. And for math, reading, and science, over the last 5 years, you can see that Anoka-Hennepin students in any measurable demographic, our achievement gaps are much smaller than state averages for achievement gaps, and our students are more likely to be proficient. Finally, on the last page, a narrative that I continue to push out into our community because there's a perception that our changing demographics are a problem. And this last page shows that over the last 10 years in our district, as our demographics have changed, our graduation rate has mirrored that change positively. As we've gone from just under 17% students of color to just over 28, our graduation rate has improved from 76% to 86%. It's no secret that this window of time mirrors the time that we've been receiving some additional funding for our comp ed pilot and being able to intervene across our system with that, those additional resources. I'd be happy to answer questions, but first I'd like to have our building experts testify, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Okay.
Law. First, and, I was going to say, just please
have them introduce themselves for the record, or if you wish to introduce them, that's fine, too.
I'd first like to introduce Principal from Lincoln Elementary School for the Arts, and Anoka, Michelle Zimmerman.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michelle. I'm the principal at Lincoln Elementary in Anoka. This is my second year as the principal there. Prior to that, I worked in a number of our elementary schools. So when I speak to what I've seen happen in our elementary schools, I speak not only from my current school, but at least a half a dozen of our elementary schools and what I've seen happen there. I'll give you a little background and some data on Lincoln Elementary and then speak to specifically how the compensatory revenue supports the students at my school. Lincoln's one of our oldest elementary schools in Anoka. It was built in 1949, and while the building is in very similar shape to what it was then, our demographics have changed significantly and continue to change. Of the approximately 450 students at Lincoln, 55% of our students receive free and reduced lunch, 26% of our students are a minority population, and just under 20% of our students receive special education services. So even with what could be deemed a challenging or unique student population in terms of making growth and meeting proficiency, Lincoln continues to be innovative and our students continue to make significant growth. At Lincoln, our kindergarten through second grade students, and Dr. Law alluded to some of our standardized measures we use in those grades, a concepts of math and a place value as well as a literacy assessment. We use data in K-2 to ensure that our students are on track to make proficiency on those MCAs and on the state standards. Those students continue to make gains in both math and reading. For 5 years in a row, more than 70% of our students have met proficiency on the math MCA, slightly lower than that, but steadily increasing is our reading proficiency. And more than 30% of our students who didn't meet proficiency made significant growth. Last year, based on our MMR scores, we received celebration status, and the 2 years prior to that, we received reward status. And last year, Lincoln was identified as beating the odds in math because our expected proficiency based on the MCA scores was 52%, and 74% of our students met proficiency. That's a 22% increase over what was expected, and math isn't even my strong subject. At Lincoln, as well as at all the elementary schools in Anoka Hennepin, we do recognize that a widely diverse population brings with it a widely diverse set of instructional needs. To best meet the needs of all of our students, and this is true at Lincoln as well as the majority of the elementary schools, I could say, we've implemented what's a school-wide intervention block. So every day for a designated 30 minutes in math and 30 minutes in reading, our students have the opportunity to receive data-driven, research-based interventions that are uniquely tailored to their instructional needs wherever they fall. These interventions provide them specific instruction and practice on the content to set them up to be successful on the grade level standards. The interventions are provided by our classroom teachers, our supplemental or our title teachers, and our building literacy and math specialists. Specifically speaking to the compensatory revenue, to support the gathering and analyzing of our student data, to create intervention groups, to plan appropriate intervention and collaboration among teachers, we have facilitated professional learning community weekly team meetings that are facilitated by our math and literacy specialists. Without these positions, these teachers would not have the capacity or the time to dig into the assessment data to the depth that they can with our math and literacy specialists who are directly they're financed by our compensatory revenue dollars. We wouldn't be able to provide the level of support to teachers that enable them to meet the needs of their students. We would lose a valuable asset to our intervention team, and students wouldn't receive what they need. So to speak to her specific role and how she supports students and teachers, I'll introduce Sarah Bromenschenkel, our math specialist.
Madam Chair and community members, my name is Sarah Bromenschenkel. I'm a math specialist at Lincoln Elementary. I've been there for 7 years in this position. In my position, along with the literacy support specialist in our building, have two main areas of focus. We have lots of areas, but the two main ones are supporting teachers and implementing first-best instruction, as well as Tier 1 and Tier 2 interventions, and secondly, supporting students in interventional settings. So supporting teachers with over 200 students approximately in the intervention, I can't possibly do that all by myself. So part of my job is to ensure that teachers are equipped to meet the needs of all students in meeting grade level proficiency. I provide job-embedded professional development on research-based instructional strategies, along with modeling, coaching, and deepening the understanding of differentiating instruction for all students. I meet with teachers on a minimum of a bi-weekly schedule, and together we look over instructional goals, analyze data, we collect through research-based assessments, and look at student proficiencies. Which leads me into the second one of supporting students in interventions. I manage and analyze the data that was collected from the research-based assessments, and through collaboration with teachers, I form focused intervention groups based on student needs. These small groups run for on an average of a two-week, you know, about 10-day cycle, and once students meet proficiency on the intervention skill, they are exited out of the group, and then new students who need that extra skill can join the group. I also run intervention groups that mirror the classroom teachers groups. If needed, I may also provide Tier 3 interventions that support select students. Collectively, we are all working together to help students meet and maintain proficiency for all learners. I have just talked about the two main areas of working with classroom teachers and students. In addition, I also closely work with special education teachers and other specialists in the building to help monitor the growth and proficiency of all learners. If these positions of math and the literacy specialist were no longer available due to funding, I believe that the ripple effects would be a great disservice to our students. The school would no longer be able to effectively and adequately assess and monitor students. These positions are crucial to the integrity of our current education system. I appreciate your consideration of this delicate matter, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I'm going to try to pronounce Ms. Bromenschenkel?
Yep.
Okay. All right. That was good. Thank you very much. If members have questions, I have a couple I'll lead off, but just let me know. So, or Superintendent Law, whoever wants to take this. So, obviously, this is more in reference to the pilot, but maybe not so completely, because you are such a large district and you have large schools, which you referenced. I think you said 11 elementary schools. Is that correct?
We have 24 elementary schools, 24. Ranging in size, the 450 on the small end to just over 1,400 on the large.
Got you. So, I'm assuming you have compensatory dollars that flow into all of your, let's just say, elementary schools for starters, or
yes, we
no?
Do.
Okay, and so do all of those elementary sites then have the literacy and math specialists, or only some of them, or how do you determine where to put those resources you're receiving?
Our compensatory, the general formula for compensatory education, is allocated out on a per pupil basis in our system. So a site that would have 55% free and reduced would receive more compensatory resources than a site that has 18%. That's why the pilot is so helpful for us, because I'll reference Andover Elementary that has just about 1,200 students. There are still almost 300 students that need support there, but our comp ed funding at that site is so small that those students might get a 0.5 to meet both the needs of math and reading to service almost 500 kids distinctly. Our pilot allows us to allocate additional resources to those sites. That's where we have some district flexibility to do that and meet the needs of those students as well.
And so would you say that that flexibility on the dollars has been important?
Absolutely.
Or if you could wave a magic wand and change compensatory, I mean, are there other services that you think would be helpful for the students you're trying to reach that are not allowed under compensatory, or are the uses largely in line with what you, and obviously you've provided some good data and some discussion from your testifiers about how you've utilized your dollars in creating these professional learning communities and teams to address, you know, proficiency in reading, math, those things?
We are currently able, the structure is fine. I don't know, the systems we have. Sarah, just to give an example, last Friday when she found out she won the opportunity to come and testify today, as Principal Zimmerman and I were trying to find her, she was coaching a teacher in her building. We would love to have the ability to both coach teachers and intervene with students at the same time. Right now, our goal, as we've shared, Chair Loon, is to maintain our current funding structure. It would be great to expand that, to provide us a little bit more resource to do more intervention in our system. But the current structure allows us enough flexibility to provide both coaching and intervention in our buildings. And we do have one math and one reading intervention at every site, and we provide that through our pilot, and then we do more intervention at sites that have higher poverty with the general content formula.
Okay. So would you say of the things that you're able to do that those specialists are critical, or are there other critical staffing needs that you're able to help meet from the compensatory? And I'll be just very direct. One of the questions I'm going to ask all of the districts that come up is, because we've had a lot of discussion about need for counselors and that, and so I'm wondering if counselors are something that you are augmenting in services for students with your compensatory dollars.
An Okanagan takes a lot of pride in our school-based mental health. And I'm going to tread lightly on the counseling topic. Every employee group in our district last year spoke to the school board about the need to intervene with students in crisis, specifically mental health crisis. We have responded to that by doing site-based mental health with partnerships with two different groups, and we have at least 24 sites that have a full-time mental health person. We also have sites where 30 or 40 students are on a waiting list to access those resources. If a site has additional comp ed resources and the mental health needs are surfacing, that site next year might add another part-time mental health therapist on site to meet those students' needs, because while students are in crisis, no amount of math intervention or reading intervention will get them to a spot where they're able to deal with the stress in their life. So yes, we are using our compensatory education resources to provide some additional mental health support in our system. Or sometimes social work depends on the community and the needs of the families in that community. Those would be two that are surfacing as potential for next year. And we have the flexibility to provide that currently.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know that one of the things that you can spend money on with the compensatory funding is some kind of parental involvement program. And I just wonder if the district has used anything with the compensatory dollars, used the compensatory dollars towards any parental interaction type program.
Mr. Law.
I would say as a percentage, a very small percentage might be for parent involvement through comp ed, because we're trying to put the majority of our money directly in student contact where the needs are surfacing.
Thank you. Representative Scott.
That's all.
Thank you. Representative Erickson. I'm sorry, Representative Murphy had raised her hand. I forgot to look at my list. I'll come back to you, Representative Erickson. My apologies. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Romanchenko, when you have your intervention with the students and they go to second intervention, where does the time come from the student to do those interventions?
Well, with that intervention block, with that intervention block, it's that time that we've already carved out in our schedule. So we just pull groups during that intervention block, where classroom teachers are also pulling groups at that time, and I am along with them on that subject.
Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, so is the student missing something else then when they're being in the intervention block?
Representative Murphy. For our 120 minutes that we have for literacy instruction, for example, 30 minutes of that time is geared towards either acceleration for students or intervention. So all students have some type of activity during that time, and she's able to work in to that time throughout the day because it's staggered by grade level.
Oh, good.
Representative.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm going to call you Mrs. B.
Okay.
So, Mrs. B, when I'm looking at the gap on this handout, to what extent is the fact that you have a very strong intervention program the reason that your gap can be much less than the state gap? Do you think is there something missing throughout the state? Should we be beefing up intervention? I know in the policy bill the department is setting out some definitions, not mandating on you, but maybe to give more clarity to what occurs during reading intervention. And I'm just wondering, you know, to what extent do you think it's the specificity of your interventions, or I know the superintendent has noted the amount of time, which is fantastic. But is there something distinctly different, or is it just because you're a pilot, or could you comment, please?
Ms. Berman-Schenkel. I think with the coaching and the modeling that as an interventionist and the extra training that we have, the teachers feel very supportive, and we have built those relationships with those teachers to be able to come into their classroom and help them and model for them and make sure that they are well-trained and equipped to meet those proficiencies with their own students.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative,
just one follow-up to that. So then, what specifically are your specialists trained in, or the specialists trained teachers in, that really gets to this, what I think is, you know, quite remarkable when it's when you're closing the gap?
Ms. Berman-Schenkel. We get a lot of extra training on the best research-based strategies to help intervene with children. So we have staff developments that are provided through the district. Mr. Law.
Our coaches get two different types of training. Some is content-rich. For example, our math publishers might go through and do interventions tied to our math curriculum based on state standards. That's one piece. Mm-hmm. And then the other part would be cognitive coaching and how to work with other adults to make other adults. Representative Erickson, I'm aware you are a former teacher. Not every time a teacher walks in the classroom do you feel comfortable. So training on how to work comfortably with other adults to improve practice is the other part of that.
Very good. As Mrs. Erickson. B, there's a mutual respect then when you're working within your cadre. So that's really good. Thank you for your work.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Scott?
Thank you. One more question. And because the numbers here are so good and better than the state average, what are you doing or what have you been called on to do as far as sharing best practices and what you're doing so this can be duplicated elsewhere?
Mr. Law.
Representative Scott, one of the more exciting things that's happening currently is around maybe some work that you've heard called Reimagine Minnesota, which is some work about close the achievement gap metro-wide. And we're looking for ideas to share practices across district lines. So I'm working with a group of 37 metro superintendents on what is the best practice that's making a difference and how do we get that shared. And it's a very inter-district effort currently.
Thank you. And Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this goes to Mrs. B., as we're calling it, but any of the testifiers. I'm following up on Chair Erickson's question about what's the difference. And I see on the data that we've been provided that while you have a meaningfully higher free and reduced price lunch average than the state, the percentage of students that are free, so probably long, you know, deeper poverty, probably multi-generational, is lower than the state average. So how do you see the level of poverty impacting student achievement, your interventions, and the student response to those interventions, given that this difference than the state average?
Mr. Long.
And do I need to ask the question again?
No, I think you're asking the question that the whole room is trying to figure out. What is the difference between concentrations of deep poverty, concentrations of poverty? Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that we can answer that based on Lincoln's experience. We feel like as we've identified students in need, we can meet their needs. I'm not sure that we're in a spot to compare the levels of poverty if it's 50% free or 40% free and 10% reduced. Just across our district, I'm not sure we have enough data to answer that question today.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, and I'll be brief, Madam Chair. I just know there's a growing national conversation about the difference between a family that may, for a period of time, qualify for reduced price lunch because of a layoff, because of a parent going back to school and leaving employment, things like that, versus a child whose family qualifies for free lunch who may have a very different experience, longer term, as I said, multi-generational, that they bring a different experience to the classroom each day. And I'm just trying to, as you said, Superintendent, we're trying to figure that out and what the impact of that is, because it appears to be significant.
Mr. Long.
Our poverty rates, as you can look on the last page of your handout, increased dramatically. The red line went from 20% to 35% over a 10-year period. And some of that comes from families losing employment, and some of that comes from families moving into our system. And because I don't have clear data to answer that question, some families with multi-generational poverty have moved to our district looking for success, and I just don't have enough to answer that question. I think it's a great question about how to best make lasting change.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Thiessen.
I think Jim covered me.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So in order to allow time for all of our school districts that we've invited to testify, I'm going to move to Austin, but I want to thank you very much, representatives from Anoka Hennepin, for being here and for the work that you're doing. And if you're able to stay for the rest of the hearing, we may come back with more questions, but thank you. All right, so now I'll invite representatives from Austin Public Schools. All right, and so I understand your superintendent was not able to join you, so you're here on your own. It's Mr. Stotz?
Stotz.
Very good. All right, well, thank you very much for being here. And if you'd please just introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. My name is Mark Stotz, and I am the Executive Director of Finance and Operations. And Madam Chair and committee members, I'll confess up front, I'm feeling completely underprepared. I didn't bring growth statistics or anything of that nature. But what I thought I'd do is start out by telling you a little bit about our district. We're a district of close to 5,000 students, outstate Minnesota. We have experienced significant growth over the past 10 years, which is somewhat unusual for an outstate district. We have a very high free and reduced lunch count. We're slightly over 50%. We also have a very high count in non-white students. We're approaching 50%. Our lower grade levels, we are actually above 50% in most primary elementary grades. In addition to that, we have a very large EL, or English learner, population, which is approaching 16% of our total student body. And so while we do many of the same things with our compensatory dollars that our colleagues from Anoka Hennepin do, we focus a good share supplementing our English language programs. You may be familiar with the funding for English language learners. It does not come close to meeting the needs of those students, so we utilize compensatory dollars to supplement the EL monies that we do receive. In addition to that, we also use these monies along with title monies for math and reading interventionists, much the same way Anoka Hennepin does. We also focus on lower class sizes in order to move towards individualized learning. As you may be aware, special education students all have individual IEP plans. We're of the hope that someday we could get to that with our entire student population, because we all know that students learn differently based on demographics, poverty, backgrounds, and so forth. So, again, that's a very broad overview. I will say our test scores for non-white students in terms of growth are very close to our non-whites or to our white students. And so we feel that we've done a good job utilizing these dollars to reduce the learning gap between those two populations.
Thank you. Mr. Stotz and Stotz, right?
Correct.
Stotz. I'm sorry. I'm going to put a little mark by your name so I won't even find myself.
I've been called worse.
Thank you. So EL students, and it sounds like, would you say it's somewhat hand-in-hand? It sounds like growth and diversity of your student population increased levels of students in poverty and EL, and some of those maybe are factors that a student may have more than one.
Correct.
So would you say that your EL needs are one with more intensity of service for each student, or duration in terms of length of time, or both?
I would say both. One of our challenges is not only do we have English language learners, but many of them, a lot of our growth has been in new immigrants to the country, first generation immigrants, from populations that quite honestly most districts haven't had experience in dealing with in the past. We've seen a lot of new immigrants from the Karenni population, also Sudanese, African populations. And so I would say both duration and intensity are really important. And I think in the 8 years I've been in Austin, we've doubled our EL staff in response to that population, utilizing compensatory dollars.
Thank you. And in terms of, so clearly that seems to be a need for your school specifically with compensatory. Are there other things within the compensatory allowed uses that you would see you would need more of, or other services that may be beneficial that you're not allowed to offer?
I'm probably not the best person to ask that question. Given my background, I'm not in the schools on a daily basis experiencing the results of what these dollars are being used for, so I guess I'd have to defer that to somebody with a lot more knowledge than I have of what's actually occurring.
Thank you. I'll turn to questions. Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Stotz, you may be the right guy for this question.
Okay.
Districts often will talk about their special education cross-subsidy.
Yes.
The amount of money needed to take from the general fund to supplement the special ed funding we give to fully pay for the services for special education students. There are districts that can also talk about their ELL cross-subsidy. Again, taken from the general fund because the funding we provide to support ELL students doesn't fully fund the services required. Is that the case in Austin, and can you, off the top of your head, sir, quantify that at all?
Off the top of my head, I can't quantify it. I will say, though, that the cross-subsidy for EL services, our EL funding does not even, it doesn't even fund 30% of our EL services. That's an area, I think, of growth that the formula hasn't kept up with. And so, you know, the use of compensatory funds to supplement those EL revenue funds is critically important in a district like ours. You know, the special education cross-subsidy continues to be a big expense. The one thing I think people sometimes don't factor in is that those special education students are also general education students, in that they're generating general education funds. Therefore, what looks like a district's cross-subsidy number may not, in fact, be that high because of the general education funds that those students generate. So would I say there's still a need for, you know, additional special education funding? Absolutely. I mean, those costs just continue to grow. And in a district like ours, we're at about 17% special education students. State average is, I think, around 12% now, 12, 13. So we're increasingly growing in that area, and our cross-subsidy continues to grow. But again, I always point out the fact that those students that are served by those programs are also generating regular education dollars. So.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I might just take a small moment of personal privilege. I'd like to give a shout out to Mr. Stotts. He is not only the business director for the Austin Schools, he's the former business director for Albert Lee Schools. I'm not sure if I'm saying your title correctly, Mark. But
that's fine.
And in addition, he's my neighbor just down the street. So.
Very nice.
Thank Good. You.
Well, we're glad to have you here. I had a question. I lost it. Well, if I think of it, I'll bring you back up. Any other questions for Representative Erickson?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. This might not be exactly on point, but because you mentioned that you have an ever-growing population who have English as the second language, do you know if those parents are enrolled in any of the AVE programs or any of the additional programs that the community, maybe community education or otherwise, offers so that the children also may get that little bit of boost because their parents are studying English?
That is a great question. And we have gotten to the point where, to answer your question, yes, they do take advantage of the AVE programs. We've specifically located our community education facility in an area of the city that has the highest concentration of non-white and EL English as second language speakers. Our adult basic ed programs are highly attended by those populations. In addition, we try to couple those with early childhood programs in the same facility so that the students can be served and they have a place for their children while they're participating in those programs. So that's a great point, and I'm really glad you brought that up.
Very good. Madam Chair, that was really good to learn that they have this kind of unity that they have created so that parents and children together are moving forward with their English skills. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions? Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one small question. What is the typical class size?
It depends on the grade level you're talking about. In the primary elementaries, well, K is obviously we try to keep under 20, but we also employ paras in the classroom to supplement that. Grades 1 through 3, we're in the 22 to 24 student range, 4, 5, 25 to 26, and then, you know, secondary is treated a little bit differently because the scheduling is differently. They're not in the same classroom 100% of the time like the elementary students are.
Thank you.
I do know that our class sizes are very comparable to, we're in the Big Nine Conference, so we kind of consider them our peer group, you know, Rochester, Mankato, Albert Lee, Faribault, Owatonna. We're right in the middle range in comparison to our peers.
Thank you. And Mr. Stotts, is your district growing in terms of student population? What are your growth projections for the next few years?
We've grown on average, I would say, 70 to 80 students per year for the past 10 years. In response to that, we had to build a new intermediate school. It houses grades 5 through 6. 3 years. The school's been open 3 years. This is its fourth year. Our projection is that growth is going to continue, but at a slower pace. And, you know, typically when you look at historical enrollments, if you look at a cohort of students that starts out in kindergarten, say they start out with 400 students in that cohort, by the time they get to high school, they're, you know, down 30 to 40 students. They could lose 10% of their class during that time period. For this year, for whatever reason, is the first year that we've experienced positive migration in all our grade levels. We can't explain it. There isn't one factor that's driving it. We've always had the employment base. Our biggest challenge is housing. But, you know, the students continue to come, and with them we have, it seems like it's been higher need students in terms of the services we need to provide. And again, without compensatory funding, that would be extremely, extremely difficult.
Thank you. Other questions? I don't think I asked you this, and if you don't know, that's fine too, but do you know if your school district hires any counselors with the compensatory dollars you get?
We do not use compensatory dollars for that purpose, but obviously if you're using compensatory dollars for other things, you're freeing up general fund dollars for those purposes. So we too have mental health practitioners, as they mentioned at Anoka.
Thank you. Well, not seeing any other questions, so thank you very much for being here with us today. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so now we will go to Minneapolis Public Schools. And Mr. Thomas, welcome.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Michael Thomas. I'm the Chief of Academics, Leadership, and Learning with the Minneapolis Public Schools. And I want to thank you in advance for the opportunity to testify today around compensatory aid that's being provided throughout the state, but specifically around Minneapolis. And again, I think a lot of similarities to my colleagues that have testified today. But I'll tell you, reflecting on just the short period of time so far today, I approach this very personally, and I approach it also professionally. You know, I was that kid that was flagged oftentimes for maybe not having enough money in the lunch account, or I was that kid who was overcoming a variety of obstacles in their lives and realized the impacts of additional school support. I also approach this in a very different professional realm, because not only do I have experience in a large urban district such as Minneapolis that has a significant level of concentration and other factors of challenges for our kids, but I also have worked many years in first-ring suburban school districts and truly understand the lived realities of Superintendent Law, his district, and the types of factors that happen in our suburban school districts as well. And so as I think about and just reflect, it changes my conversation a bit today, so I just appreciate this opportunity as I draw on some of those experiences. Minneapolis Public Schools is a large, comprehensive urban school district. We have about 75 schools, just quick demographic data. We have about 36,000 students, just under 36,000 students. About 38% of our students are African American or black. That includes African American as well as other African students. We have about 18% of our students who are Latino, 6% are Asian, about 4% are Native American, and 34% of our population is white. We have 18% of our students in Minneapolis receiving the support of special education, about 62% of our students receive free and reduced lunch, 22% of our students receive English language support, and about 7% of our students are HHM, or homeless highly mobile. And compensatory education aid has a significant impact on a district like ours. Again, I want to repeat, a couple of weeks ago we were here with Representative Erickson's committee, and I'd like to reflect on our new superintendent Ed Graff, and he said when he was testifying that we must hold every one of our students to high standards in Minneapolis Public Schools, and this is critically important to the long-term success. But also with those high standards means high supports. And this is where a lot of your work comes into play in terms of how you're supporting compensatory education. As you may know, not every child begins his or her educational journey from the same spot. And unfortunately, some students' pathways to college and career readiness are more arduous. It is our responsibility to meet them where they are and provide the supports that are necessary so that they may achieve. Compensatory aid is important to schools so that they may accelerate their growth and become college and career ready. Madam Chair, I know several districts that are presenting today, and so in the interest of time, I thought it would be most helpful for me to focus my comments on three key elements. The first is how compensatory aid fits into the overall budget of our district. The second is how Minneapolis Schools allocates compensatory aid. And the third element is how schools use those resources, the research that underpins those decisions, and the ways in which we measure the impacts of those investments. State aid accounts for more than half of the Minneapolis Public Schools budget. And compensatory aid accounts for about a tenth of our total district budget. So this is a significant amount of funding that we receive. As committee members know, other significant education budget items are special education. Some of our representative today has inquired about cross subsidies. In 2015, Minneapolis Public Schools spent about $123 million on special education compliance. We received around $67 million on special education compliance, and that left about a $56 million funding gap to address the legally mandated services for students. In cases of special ed as well as EL, those requiring EL services, we know that the needs that our students come to our schools with each and every day oftentimes exceed the allocated revenue. I believe it is important for lawmakers to consider how each budget component fits in the total funding of schools while also looking at how to best get the academic outcomes for every student in our district. In Minneapolis, we allocate 100% of our compensatory funding to the school that generates it. And that means our schools with the highest concentrations of poverty receive the most funding per pupil, very similar to what Superintendent Law was sharing. Madam Chair, I believe you have a list of all of our schools and the amounts that they receive. We have also provided a summary of compensatory expenditures by broad budget categories, and then also gave you an example of how an individual school makes decisions at the local level to expend their compensatory aid. Each school has varied needs, and those are reflected in their budgeting decisions at the local level per state statute. However, there are similarities across schools that you will see in these data. Our schools where students experience the highest level of poverty are investing in services to address student needs that result from experiences that they bring with them to school each and every day. These schools are investing in professionals to provide mental health services, counseling and social work. They are investing in behavior intervention specialists and educational assistants to individualize instruction and help students so they may focus on learning. And also they invest in smaller class sizes to help provide more one-to-one attention for our students. So you could sum it up by saying that we are strategically investing in relationships with our kids, caring adults who are invested in meeting each student's unique learning needs. Madam Chair, I thought it would also be helpful for me to go a little deeper to provide more detail about one of our Northside schools. Lucy Laney is a pre-K through fifth grade school in Minneapolis, in the north side of Minneapolis. About 97% of the students qualify for free lunch. This goes back to Representative Dabney's question about the distinction between free and free and reduced lunch, and I'll certainly unpack that a little bit later. 95% of the students are of color. 14% of the students at Lucy Laney are EL learners, 18% receive special education services, and nearly 1 in 5 experienced homelessness last year. Lucy Laney receives about $1.3 million in compensatory education aid. The school uses nearly 3/4 of their funding on student supports to address the very real stresses and trauma that our kids experience at home and throughout the community that make their path to academic achievement more challenging than many other students. You may recall hearing about Lucy Laney in the news last year. It was our family open house day in the fall for students and parents across our entire district. We were literally welcoming thousands of students throughout the entire district that evening to share in the excitement of the beginning of a new school year. At Lucy Laney, as families were walking into a school, a significant shooting took place across the street. Families scrambled for safety, and the staff also doing the same. The principal, Mari Melander, at Lucy Laney and her team are fiercely protective of their students and families. For the past several years, on the first day of school, staff create a human pathway from the school buses to the front doors of Lucy Laney to welcome, cheer, and protect students as a means to send a different message to the students and our community about Lucy Laney being a safe and welcoming learning environment. If students do not feel safe, they will not be able to learn. And Madam Chair, these are the shirts that many staff and adults at Lucy Laney wore. It says Hope Dealers. And on the back, Lucy Laney Family 2017. They have a theme every year to really focus their attention on students. And this year was a theme of hope, to inspire our students that irrespective of some of the challenges that may face them each and every day, they will thrive at a school like Lucy Laney. And let me assure you, this is a message that our teachers and our adults send every single day to combat the lived reality in many of our school communities in Minneapolis Public Schools. And I wish I could say this was an isolated incident, but it is not. In the neighborhood where Lucy Laney is situated, weapons offenses are up 300%. Aggravated assaults are up 39%. And unfortunately, there are some societal factors that families encounter on a regular basis, yet still show up each and every day ready and willing to learn. The trauma students experience in the community shows up in many ways in our classrooms. As we shared in Representative Erickson's committee, the instability many of our families face requires a high level of support. One of our Northside principals puts it this way. On Mondays, we essentially have to hit the reset switch for our students. Mm-hmm. We don't know what our students have encountered over the days of the weekend or long periods of breaks from school. They need to know they're safe before they can learn. Compensatory education aid is a key to having the high supports that our students need. By taking the time to invest in relationships with students, we are also able to address their social-emotional learning needs, which is also done through some of our compensatory, I think some of the questions from the representatives around counselor and mental health support. Research shows that by doing so, students can realize an 11% increase in achievement, and those with research-based social-emotional learning investments at early ages of kindergarten also see associations with positive adult outcomes in areas of education, employment, criminal activity, substance abuse, as well as mental health. And this is through some of the research through our Castle Foundation out of Chicago. In addition to providing social and emotional support, Principal Mari Melander at Lucy Laney also makes strategic investments in co-teaching, whereby content experts in literacy, math, and special ed are partnered with each grade level teacher to maximize the support in the classroom. And this is some of the areas that they are investing in utilizing some of their compensatory aid. About 2 weeks ago, I had an opportunity to do a learning walk or a walkthrough at Lucy Laney. And I walked into a classroom, probably about 20 to 25 students in that classroom. I think this was a third or fourth grade classroom. In that classroom, there were four adults in that class. There was a general education teacher, there was a special education teacher, there was a specialist that we heard from earlier today, and then we also had a paraprofessional in that room. There was no distinction that I could make looking at the four adults providing support to these students. The level of collaboration, of co-planning and co-teaching was seamless. It was flawless. And with that level of support in classrooms at schools like Lucy Laney, they can differentiate the vast array of learning needs that exist in our classrooms each and every day. Building leadership at schools like Laney also finds that as she makes investments in that co-teaching, staff are feeling more and more supported. And as staff feel more supported, we are beginning to see schools like Lucy Laney stabilize in teachers. Whereas in the past, Lucy Laney had some of the highest staff turnover rates in our district, almost each year, a third of the teaching staff would leave that school. In the past 2 years at Lucy Laney, there have been approximately three staff that left the school. All were due to spousal job relocations. The principal also notes that with greater student success, attendance rates also continually increase. We all know for certain that if students are going to be learning, they have to be in school. About 90% of the students at Lucy Laney are in the top two tiers of attendance. The building administration is moving away from exclusively funding more reactionary behavioral support, where she's able to make more preventative academic investments such as co-teaching. When we look at the impact, how are we measuring it? I believe some of the representatives asked today, how are we seeing that this is actually having an impact on our learning outcomes for our kids? What we have been able to find out through some of the co-teaching is that incoming students at Lucy Laney typically enter school significantly behind, maybe multiple years behind grade level. So staff are committed to an accelerated plan to accelerate learning for students over time. Students who attend Lucy Laney for at least 3 years, those that we get traction with, opposed to 1 year or less, those are the students that are making academic gains at a significantly higher rate. So, for example, to put this into somewhat of a context, kids who are there 3 years or more are able to statistically show that they have a 15% greater meeting expected learning growth targets or exceeding those great growth targets. This accelerated learning rate over time is what our students need to eventually close the achievement gaps at schools like Laney and to overcome the barriers that they uniquely face, as I previously mentioned. And let me also share with how stabilizing our schools, compensatory aid allows for the space and staff to think innovatively about ways to accelerate academic achievement. The worst thing we want to do is continue to do the same things. We want to think out of the box to find different alternatives that we can try in Minneapolis Public Schools to ensure that we can meet the learning outcomes of our kids. Last year, we piloted a freshman on track program modeled from the Chicago Public Schools. While it is not completely paid for by compensatory, it provides a significant level of support. Our ninth grade on track system that we've adopted from Chicago Public Schools shows that ninth grade outcomes are the greatest predictor of on-time graduation. The goal of this work for our freshmen on track is that more of our ninth graders finish the year on track to graduate and ultimately to increase our four-year graduation rate and help close the achievement gap in on-time graduation. This has been a pattern and a trend that we've been seeing for the past 3 years in Minneapolis Public Schools. We piloted the work last year at Henry and Roosevelt starting around December. This academic school year is the first year that we are expecting all of our comprehensive high schools to implement the freshman on track system, and they're using this data to plan for interventions, much of which you've heard from some of our fellow colleagues at other districts, so that when students fall off track, they're immediately able to intervene and get them back on track so that they can graduate in a four-year time frame. And it should be noted, again, the greatest predictor of four-year graduation is ninth grade course failure, and so we're intervening early at that ninth grade level, as well as partnering with our middle schools to look at where students are even entering ninth grade off track from where they're predicted to be at eighth grade. So our initial results are positive. After the first term of implementing this program, ninth grade course failures are down 6% and down 8% for African-American students, 11% for our Latino students when compared to quarter one last year. At Edison High School, the percentage of students that have failed a course is down 25% from the year prior. I would like to close my testimony today by sharing one of my favorite quotes by Booker T. Washington. He is quoted by saying, "Success, I've learned that success is not to be determined by what one has attained in life, rather by the obstacles one has overcome while trying to succeed." By this definition, the students at Lucy Laney and all across Minneapolis Public Schools are successful. Perseverance and grit and character traits are character traits that students hone when overcoming such obstacles. While we cannot remove all the obstacles that our students face with compensatory funding, we know collectively that we are responsible for providing those high supports that will give them the greatest opportunity for success. Madam Chair and members of this committee, I want to thank you for the opportunity for me to be able to address the committee today and open up for any kind of questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Thomas, I actually have three questions for you. Could you first start talking a little bit about, like, parental involvement, outreach requirements tied to the law with compensatory aid?
Mr. Thomas.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. With regards to compensatory education, by state statute, school sites, when they put together a compensatory plan, they must engage their site councils or the equivalent at the local level to ensure that they're bringing parent perspective and feedback to determining how they're going to allocate their resources. Again, that's going to be data-driven by how our students are achieving, but then also strong partnering with our parent community. We know our parents are our students' first and foremost teachers, and so we want to ensure that not only through compensatory education, but in general, that all of our schools are, through their site councils or other organizations outreaching to our school parents, that they're bringing that perspective to the table.
Representative Sandstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My next question is, In the handout where you were talking about Lucy Laney Elementary School, one of your expenditures was for school climate and safety. Is this like a dean of students or a behavioral interventionist? What does this look like in this building? Mr. Thomas?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, when you take a look at the broad category of school climate and safety, what you'll find often is at our secondary sites, these might be some of our deans at our middle school and high school, and what we call our Student Success Program Assistant, or SSPAs, at our elementary schools. Those are individuals who will help provide support in that instructional learning environment. So if a student is making a choice that takes them off task from learning, that staff person could intervene oftentimes in the classroom, and if need be, remove that student from the class, process with that student in terms of the antecedent and the behavior that might have triggered to integrate them back into that school. In Minneapolis, really take a restorative approach to our learning.
Representative Sandstein. Madam Chair, just a little bit more on the elementary level. It was called an SSPA.
That's a Student Success Program Assistant, similar to a dean at the secondary level, correct.
And then do you have like a district-wide policy or plan that you implement? Mr. Thomas.
Madam Chair, yes. Well, we have a behavior standards policy in Minneapolis Public Schools that we passed about 3 years ago that provides guidance in terms of how we would intercede with regards to students who are making choices that would detract them from the learning environment. So, yes, those staff are specifically trained in maybe specific behavioral supports as well as academic intervention support.
Representative Sandstein, thank you. One last question. Where do I get a T-shirt? I can let you show us.
Come out to Lucy Laney, first day of school. We'll make sure that you're in that human wall to welcome our kiddos.
That would be a privilege. Thank you. Thank you. Other questions? So, Mr. Thomas, is every, you said all of your compensatory dollars stay at the site where the students are that generated them. And so, because we do allow some flexibility. So Minneapolis Public Schools does not utilize that flexibility. They keep the money at the individual school site. Am I right in that?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
So is each school then, you provided a great breakdown of what happens at Lucy Laney and specifically and then overall where the school is every school very craft a very unique plan with their compensatory dollars depending on the school site?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is actually the intent of the statute, to give flexibility to each unique school community. Certainly in Minneapolis Public Schools, our theory of action is that schools are the units of change. We know that the real work happens at the school level, and so we want to support our schools and our school leaders and teachers and parents to make those local decisions that are very unique to each school community. So we also have a strategic plan, Acceleration 2020, that has broad strategic goals as well as objectives built into that. And so our associate superintendents will also be reviewing our compensatory plans juxtaposed to our strategic plan to ensure that there's alignment there to meet the broader district outcomes. But we know that how that happens, we provide that level of autonomy and support at the school level.
Very good. So could you give me an example of something maybe in one of your other elementary buildings that you may be doing that's very different than what you're doing at Lucy Laney?
Sure. Again, I think Edison High School is a great example that I spoke to in terms of how we've been able to leverage some of our compensatory aid to support our freshmen on track, and so that's a good secondary or a high school example. You can also take a look at some of the broader categories. When we look at class size management, we know that research will show that unless you can really buy down class size to around 14 or lower, that it really doesn't have a statistical impact. But what we also know is that when you have a classroom of, let's say, 15 to 20 compared to 30, you can individualize and have more one-to-one relationships with your students to ensure that you truly understand their learning needs. And so you'll see many of our schools will also augment the general funding formula that's given by way of teacher allocation based on classroom projections. So, for example, I might be allocated an odd percentage, maybe a 3.6 FTE. Well, finding a 0.6 teacher might be more challenging, and so I might use some of my compensatory funding to buy that up to a 1.0 to attract a higher quality candidate to that teacher allocation. as well as some of our instructional or behavioral support. You will find that very consistently across the board in many of our schools in Minneapolis. We're buying paraprofessionals in many of our schools. And we know that in Minneapolis Public Schools, and this is kind of how we leverage as a system, maybe compensatory, where we might not take our statutory allotment to pull back. But we know that many of our schools are buying paraprofessionals, which in our district tend to be many staff of color. And when we look at our licensed staff personnel, those tend not to be many staff of color. And so we have actually augmented the investments through compensatory of building our paraprofessional ranks, and then also with our human capital division creating Grow Your Own Pipeline. So we are actually intentionally recruiting paraprofessionals of color to support them in getting their teacher's license so that we can actually diversify our licensed teaching ranks as well. And so that has proven to be how we've been able to leverage and kind of augment the compensatory investments at the district level without removing any dollars from our school sites.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Any other questions for Mr. Thomas? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does Minneapolis prepare the kind of chart that we received from Anoka-Hennepin to show the proficiency gap between student groups of color and our white student group?
Yes, we actually, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, we do have that as a public-facing dashboard on our website.
Thanks.
And so anybody in our public can actually look at very comparable measures and bar graphs as
Thank
well.
Thank you very much. We'll check it.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this may would be for Anoka as well, but if we possibly get that breakdown, not just by ethnic group, but also break those down by poverty status, you know, so we can see, you know, I think that would be more useful than just having African-American and Native-American, but to see African-Americans who are in poverty versus African-Americans who aren't. So both of the districts could get that information. I think that would be a much more useful set of data than just a breakdown.
Okay, and I think, well, I'm assuming maybe the chart was just of their compensatory students for Anoka-Hennepin. So those would all be children that fall into the free or reduced lunch category.
The chart isn't that way.
Okay. So we will ask the schools if they can, they said they're shaking their heads yes, so I think they can separate that out.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, that is something that we can do both on our public dashboard, but we can also do some of that scrubbing for the committee, so we can certainly submit that.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? All right. If not, thank you very much, Mr. Thomas. And we have time now to turn to St. Paul Public Schools. Thank you very much for all of your detailed information. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, very good. Oh, yep, there's handouts coming around right now.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools.
And you need a microphone.
Oh, yeah. Can you pull the microphone a little closer to you, Ms. Gilbert?
Sure.
Thank you.
First of all, I don't want anybody to faint at the slide, the size of the slide deck here. And I have to say that we spent quite a bit of time actually removing slides, which would have answered a lot of the questions that you've already asked already.
Okay.
But since many of you are new to the district, and I've been representing the district since 1987, I could spend the whole hour talking about what's going on in St. Paul Public Schools. But I think we're hooked up now, and it is prettier in color than it is on the paper. Let them introduce themselves.
I'm Kate Wilcox-Harris. I'm the Chief Academic Officer for St. Paul Public Schools.
Hello, I'm Hans Saad, Assistant Superintendent of the Office of Teaching and Learning.
Welcome.
So we'd just like to start out with presenting just a snapshot about the St. Paul Public Schools. And first of all, and a couple of takeaways. St. recall, I know Anoka is a bigger school district than us, but I think we can claim to be one of the most wonderfully diverse, however very complex, student population. We do target our compensatory money at the school site. 90% goes to the school site, and then we take the 10% that's left over, and then we redirect that to a school site. Sometimes a school site might not generate enough compensatory revenue to do some of the basic minimum requirements that we have, and so in that case, we do funnel that back to the school. Our compensatory revenue is allocated based on best practices. We have a lot of parent input about how we use it, and there's parent choice in the district. And as you'll see by our presentation, our at-risk students and families have access to everything from high-quality birth to five programs through college and career readiness.
So I would like to just give you a little bit of a synopsis of the district, which is in front of you, the district at a glance. We have 125 languages and dialects spoken among our 37,000 students. We have 34% of our students who are bilingual or emerging bilinguals. We have 72% free and reduced. The majority of those students are free lunch. And we have 16% of our students who receive special education, 2,000 who are homeless. The breakdown racially is 32% Asian American, 30% African American, 22% Caucasian American, 14% Latino American, and 2% American Indian. And you will also note that some of our students do qualify both as an emerging bilingual, free and reduced, and special education. We have numerous programs, 58 schools, traditional schools, but we also have 34 educational programs. That includes schools such as our LEAP Academy for new students, new EL students enrolling as high schoolers through age 21. We have Gordon Parks as an example, an alternative schedule where students can receive an adult diploma. Our language academies, our special education programs for level 4 and 5 students, and Agape for teen moms who are parenting and pregnant teen moms.
Our mobility is very high. In the district, every year in grades 1 through 12, we did not count kindergarten. Obviously, we expect new kids then. We have about 5,000, roughly 5,000, some years slightly more, some years slightly less, that are new to the district, and they come at all grade levels. And half of the new students that come to the district are EL learners, with a large group coming at 9th and 10th grade. So sometimes when people have some questions about our high school graduation rate, I think it just points out the challenges that we have with all the new emerging EL learners that arrive to us as secondary students. If you see in the next graph, our EL students are, for the most part, we had 1,500, a little over, almost 1,600 students just since May, that have arrived at the district through the beginning of February this year. And if you take a look there at level 1 through 5, you can see that the majority of students are actually level 5 or level 1 learners, meaning that they are just have no English or have just barely emerging English. The next slide just shows you the breakdown of languages. And as you see, it's quite a variety, although... Sorry, my vision is really bad. That's what happened to me in old age. So you can see the type of learners that, so Spanish, Somali, you can see a large group of Kren students, Hmong, and then some various Ethiopian and East African languages. The next slide, I want to talk a little bit about our special education cross-subsidy, and I think that's brought up before. We have a $42.9 million special education cross-subsidy, and that does include a contribution. It already has included a contribution for general education revenue. And I think this might where we might differ a little bit from Anoka. Our special ed concentration is higher, and we also have higher levels of service that we provide. As you can see, we had over 2,100 referrals just for our early childhood special education. We serve 6,200 students, over 500 autism spectrum disorder, and for the most part, those students are co-taught in our classrooms. We do have separate programs in schools for the over 200 profound developmentally and cognitively delayed and severely multiply impaired students. And those students receive a variety of services, including we have some students that come to school on a ventilator. And so we actually have LPNs at some of our schools that deal with the health compromised patients that come in. Nearly 650 of our students are diagnosed with emotional behavior disorder. We have a large group of OHI, which is other health impairment, and that ranges from ADHD, fetal alcohol syndrome, epilepsy, to and then would be kids that have Tourette's or other health diagnoses as well. For the most part, when we can, we do honor a parent's request to do mainstreaming, and we do a lot of co-teaching, and we use a lot of our compensatory dollars to provide, as you'll see in the next slide, to do the co-teaching model, although we also do have self-contained level 3 and 4 and 5 programs in schools. Also, we do have part of our special ed cross subsidy includes our homeless transportation, which was over $2.8 million last year. So getting to the main uses of compensatory revenue, we spend $43 million to reduce class size across the district and provide individual instruction. And there is flexibility at the district, at the school level on how it is used. We do the allocations based on poverty. So there's a greater allocation. Again, it goes to the site, but there's even a greater allocation for the higher poverty schools. Many of the schools buy additional math, reading, and science teachers. You'll see, and I know Mike McCullough has been here before, and he talks about he uses his compensatory to provide, in addition to math teachers, some extended time for his kids. And these smaller class sizes and individual instruction allow us to have at-risk kids have an opportunity to the programs that my kids have the opportunity to around AP, IB, concurrent enrollment. We provide some of those wraparound support so those kids can succeed in the college and career readiness courses. We also have a large EL cross-subsidy, and so our second largest compensatory expenditure is for additional EL staff that are assigned by the school. Again, they're assigned based on where the EL learners are. And even though this is quite a high amount, I can tell you that every single second language group in the district has come to us asking us for more support. It pays for multilingual staff, EL staff. We have 25 language academies in our elementary, middle, and high schools, and those tend to serve level 1 and 2 learners. Those would be new. Also, they serve in sheltered classrooms, and we'll show you a schedule on the next slide. We do have dual language programs at some sites in Spanish and in Hmong. There's additional instruction for Hmong, Spanish, Karen, and Somali. Those are the four biggest groups that we have. And we do, again, employ a co-teaching model. We found out that if you pull kids out to teach them English, then they're not getting their math, their social studies, their science instruction. And so for kids that are, as I mentioned before, special ed and EL, we move the content and the EL teachers into the same classroom so that the student can try and stay on track and make the growth necessary since they don't come to us all at the same point. We do, because of the multiple languages we have in the district as well, we do provide a lot of parental support. For example, we can't have parent conferences or we can't have student meetings unless we have interpreters for the various groups. We translate all of our materials into multiple languages, both in person and on the website. And it's important, obviously, if we can't communicate with a parent, it's difficult to make some changes at home with the student. We also have the LEAP Academy for late arrivals. Those kids have been down here at the Capitol begging you to let them stay in school longer than age 21 because they want to get a high school diploma and they don't want to get a GED. And we also serve kids through our adult diploma and our GED program. Hans can talk to you about, this is just a quick demonstration of the complicated way that we provide services.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, just briefly on this slide, it really shows how we take our compensatory funding and our resources to provide multiple pathways for our ELL students to graduate. We could spend a lot of time just talking about this grid, and I'm not going to take up the time to do that today. But the point of this is we've supported students by having differentiated, personalized pathways towards graduation that allow students to accelerate based upon the level of English they have, and to provide additional supports when they're struggling or needing more time. So this leads to that 4-, 5-, and 6-year graduation rate fluctuating depending on what the path is that the student needs to best suit their needs towards graduation.
The next slide speaks to your question, Madam Chair. The third largest expenditure that we have in our compensatory pot is for counselors. And we target small group instruction, work with families on a school-wide basis. There's individually and then small group counseling. And we make sure we do an allocation so that no school in the district has less than a 0.5 counselor. This is a sample. The next slide shows you. We do a time study to see how the counselors, what kind of work the counselors are doing. And you can see that just in the first quarter of this year, there were over 7,000 individual and group contacts with students. And the biggest area were social-emotional work with both individual students and groups.
And I'd like to take a moment to focus on one of those schools, which is Fallon Lake Elementary School. That's a dual language, among dual language school. And it's listed here for you. That is a celebration eligible school. It's a school that where proficiency wouldn't tell the whole story, where you see students year after year who are making 86% high or medium growth across the school. The EL instructors are 9 FTEs. We have 7 pairs there to provide bilingual support. There is a 0.5, as I said, Hmong studies, but there's also 0.5 Spanish Latino instructional support and family engagement. The school has 9 languages spoken, and they have a comprehensive family involvement plan. They serve one school counselor, library and technology support, and they have artisan residence partnerships, an elder corps of senior volunteers, and assemblies for their scholars.
The next slide just demonstrates how Washington Technology, and like I said, Michael McCullough has been here, so I think, and some of you have been lucky enough to get to the school. He pays for 5 full-time counselors out of his compensatory. He has additional math teachers. You know, they're a STEM school, a BioSmart and STEM school. They also have a language academy at both the middle and the high school, so they have significant, and they serve level 1 through 5 EL learners there, and it's done through the sheltered classes for the emerging English learners, as well as co-teaching as those students advance through the curriculum. There's paraprofessional support and a lot of that. Those tend to be bilingual staff that work with both students and families. And then he uses quite a bit of his for his extended time program. And you know there's 100 different academic and enrichment supports that he uses along with the supports that he provides for his concurrent enrollment students. And his school, I think last year, earned the most University of Minnesota CIS credits of any of the high schools in St. Paul. There's a few other smaller expenditures we have for CompEd. We do because of some of the child find and the supports that the special ed do with some of the regular instruction. We do charge some of that work to CompEd, as well as some non-licensed instructional support and mobility and attendance staff that deal with the fluctuation of students we talked about earlier, and some instructional support, and that would tend to be students who are can't afford some of our field trips or some of the fees that we have or other opportunities. In addition to that, I just want to point out, and I think as I was a pediatric nurse practitioner before I started hanging out at the Capitol, and when I first started with the district, I was shocked at how much health and wellness support that we provide, and that amount has kind of exponentially increased. So in addition to what we allocate for compensatory, we also have 33 nurses and over 30 social workers and bilingual health aides who come out of our general fund. So these are folks that we have to just target for the students, because again, if they're not doing well emotionally or socially, or they're having an asthma attack, they're A, not going to be learning in school, they're going to be absent from school. And you can see we have over 800 kids with 504 plans. ADHD and ADD and anxiety and depression are the highest group of that. We have over 4,200 students that have asthma, and you know there's a high correlation to asthma and poverty, as well as poverty and diabetes as well. So just in October, there were 1,156 contacts for acute asthma in some of our schools. We have one school that 20% of the kids either have nebulization or inhalers every day. So that's what we do in addition to trying to deal with our academic supports. We have 75 students with type 1 diabetes, and we have to have nursing personnel, because they're on insulin pumps or could have an insulin reaction at school, we have on average 56 contacts daily with those students that have diabetes. Additionally, these are other targeted services that again come from our general fund, but based on the poverty in our school, we make an additional contribution above and beyond our categorical revenue for early childhood family education programs. And again, this targets families that couldn't afford to pay the fees for our programs. It's a focus on literacy. We provide services where the family is. So it may be in a homeless shelter. It may be in a housing project. And we have 6 culturally specific home visitors. We spend $5.9 million out of our general fund for our pre-K program. And again, that's targeted EL, special ed, and free reduced lunch. And we locate those in services in places where those students are. We spend $1.5 million on parental support and engagement. And so those are parent academies, children learning academies. We have multilingual and community parent advisory councils that advise us on curriculum and instruction and also meet with the board to talk about their student needs. We have multiple community partnerships. We run a program called School Attendance Matters, and we have an ombudsman, family engagement. I mean, many other things to try and engage our families. And then finally, we have a significant contribution, again, from our general fund for our personalized learning. And I can't tell you when you go to the schools, seeing the EL kids, special ed kids, and the kids, they walk around hugging their technology. And again, you understand that families that are very poor can afford to have some of the technology that my kids had available to them. And based on our student surveys and our parent surveys, the kids will tell you, especially the people who are that they do attribute having the iPad to organize their work and making sure that
members, anyone's, your cell phone is too close to the microphones, we're getting a little feedback, so.
No, that's not.
There we go. Okay, thank you.
I was thinking that was a timer of some sort.
No. Although we are
all the slides. The next several slides highlight the how focused and intentional we've been around these dollars, how we integrate the class size expenditures with the needs for our interventions, and how we focus on EL and personalized instruction, as well as our community partners to help with both Tier 1, 2, and 3 interventions.
So when you look at this slide here, I wonder if that went down. When you look at the slide here, we know that in St. Paul Schools, with under 40% of our students being proficient in reading by third grade, we know that we have an upside-down pyramid, and that is we have more students needing more support than that typical 80%. You want to see 80% of the kids getting it in the core and then kind of add a layer of support above that for Tier 2 interventions, and then another layer on top of that for Tier 3 interventions. In St. Paul, we're seeing that kind of flipped on its head. So what we've done is we've made instructional time really valuable and in the core instruction area for all students, that we're able to provide interventions during the regular day. You heard that earlier about 130 minutes in Anoka for literacy, and if you look at St. Paul, we have 140 minutes a day, so we can embed the interventions during the instructional day. Our readers workshop, our writers workshop, and our literacy skills blocks have time for grade level instruction at the beginning, the mini lesson, and then a large portion of both readers and writers is targeted towards individual and small group instruction based on the data needs and other needs of the students. So it's built in, and it's connected with our school improvement process and our Title I funding that we know that no one funding bucket alone is going to solve all of our problems, and so strategically we make sure we align the funding sources and the goals of the different programs to make sure we're really providing as many wraparound services as we can for our students. Similarly, for math at the elementary level, we have somewhere between 75 and 90 minutes of math instruction a day that, again, allows us to personalize instruction during the day. We provide that common experience at grade level for the students, and then we differentiate and personalize instruction throughout the day and then end with a common experience at closure activity. We also added in a math review and mental math block, which is a research-based strategy around supporting our students with gaps that they might have from previous lessons or previous grade levels, and preparing them ahead of time for the next unit of study, filling in gaps prior to that. So that's another intervention strategy that we embed into our core instruction. Of course, we can't succeed with just St. Paul alone. We need to connect with our community and our partners. We work with Minnesota Reading Corps, we work with Reading Partners, and we also utilize level literacy interventions at a number of our schools as well to really deeply intervene, more of a tier three or a high intensity intervention for our students.
All right, and we are, in the middle school, we are, I'm sorry, Scott, but we are just about out of time.
Okay.
So if I can, I wanted to just see if members have some questions so we can at least get to that. And I know you've got a lot of other great stuff on your presentation. I'm sorry, we're running behind. So just an overall question for you, because clearly a lot of needs in the St. Paul Public Schools, and you've done a lot to really customize your and braid other funds with your compensatory to meet those needs. If you had to identify one or two areas where I'm guessing EL is one, but where you're really just not able to keep up with demand, what would they be?
Madam Chair, and I think that's a great question. I think we, depending on which day, which group comes, I think having more resources for EL learners, but again, the social-emotional issues are kind of overwhelming the district at the same time. And so, and then the other thing I think that I'll just say, we would like to have more, we are not a QCOM district, and we would like to have more professional development going on. And when we've seen cuts, as we made cuts, we've had to cut some of those programs because we have tried to keep the resources in the classroom. So I think we really struggle to try and meet the needs, even with the additional staff. When I did ask one of the principals, can you be more specific, how do you use it? I said, if you wanted to hear a grown-up get to tears, the thought that some of the compensatory money might not be available made him quite nervous. And I think it really is critical. I think the other thing, which is kind of outside of the school, is kind of trying to help provide some stability for the families. I think the staff does a yeoman's job every day at meeting those kids' needs, but they have a lot of trauma. Their housing is unstable. They're nutritionally unstable. There's a lot of things that go on in these kids' life, and the fact that they actually are doing as well as they are doing, I think, is kind of a testament to how, regardless of the family circumstances, that they all want their kids to succeed.
Thank you. Other questions? Right, we have run right up on our time, and I apologize, but very thorough presentation, very good information. I'll ask you more offline, and I'm going to ask the other schools too. I'm really curious about those asthma numbers, especially in one school, which seems really high, but maybe other schools are experiencing similar things. So I'll ask you offline, and I'll tell the committee. So with that, thank you very much to all of our testifiers today. Good presentations, and committee is